Welcome, everybody. This is Elaine Taylor-Klaus with Impact ADHD, and I want to welcome you to another conversation, an interview with one of my favorite marriage consultants, Melissa Orlov, who has literally written the books on ADHD and marriage and the Couple's Guide to Thriving. And, you know, if you're looking for understanding ADHD and marriage, the go-to person is Melissa Orlov. She's written a bunch of wonderful pieces on our site that you can find. She's written some fabulous books and done a lot of work, interviewed by the New York Times and U.S. News and World Report. She's the woman to go to on ADHD and marriage. And while we're going to talk today, expand beyond strict ADHD, it's ADHD and all the related issues that come with it. I want to welcome you, Melissa, to this conversation, and I'm excited to talk to you about when parents aren't on the same page when raising their complex kids and how we can begin to shift that dynamic. So welcome.
Thanks very much. I'm happy to be talking with you.
So let's get us started on this a little bit in terms of what is the dynamic that happens when parents aren't on the same page? What are some of the things that you've noticed in your practice that parents come to you with?
Well, one of the things that I see is I will, particularly when there are young children in the household, there is a sort of a shift in the way that the household functions when the kids are introduced into that. And with my couples, one or both people have ADHD, and the combination of the lack of sleep and the introduction of a new person into the relationship and then some of the difficulties in the organizational stuff that has to happen for kids and is unrelenting, it all combines to create some pretty traumatic situations for couples. It's a very tough time for a lot of couples. It starts really early, and it's a real struggle because it's sort of unexpected. People think that having kids is going to be this amazing thing, and then they have this huge struggle around how do you stay organized, and the lack of sleep really contributes to the increase of ADHD symptoms in the parent or parents who have it, so it makes things worse, and it's a tough time for couples. So they come to me, and a lot of times they're arguing over, you know, what they should be doing to help these kids be healthy, and I also hear a lot of concerns about whether or not partners who have ADHD are contributing enough to helping with the burden of taking care of a new addition to the family.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because if you've got one parent with a developed executive function and one without, it often sort of the burden shifts a little bit there.
Yes, and since the symptoms get worse with lack of sleep, it all sort of comes together at once. The number of things that have to be attended to within a certain time frame, so right then, because the baby doesn't wait, you know, it increases dramatically, and also the difficulties with managing those things also increase at the same time. So it's a bad combination.
Well, and then it doesn't necessarily shift as the kids get older. The dynamic shifts, or the details shift, but the dynamic just sort of continues to play out over time, right?
Yeah, and one of the things that happens is as the couples struggle around these issues, these tasks need to get done. So if there's a partner who's having difficulty doing the tasks, it leads the other one to sort of naturally say, okay, well, It's the easiest path is for me to just do it myself. And so that partner takes on a lot more responsibility than maybe they were expecting to. And that can lead to resentment, which then gets into a negative cycle with the partner. So by the time the kids are older, many of the sort of classic patterns that couples run into when one or both of them has ADHD are pretty fully developed. And often they're really struggling in the relationship. And so that that doesn't make things better. Let's just put it that way. It can be really tough.
And they start to argue. You're talking about this before they ever get to a point where their kids may be diagnosed with issues or identified.
Yes, absolutely. So then there are other issues once the kids get diagnosed, where very frequently whoever the partner is who is doing more of the child care will end up learning, because they need to help support their child, much more about what the impact is of, in my case, the ADHD. And then they want, so they say, oh, well, we should be doing things this way or that way, and they start to sort of take over, and the other person feels kind of left out. And sometimes they have very strong disagreements over, you know, what things should be happening, when the kids should be going to bed, whether or not it should be a regular bedtime, or, you know, whether or not you're helping them brush their teeth, or did you forget to help them brush their teeth, and is that a crisis or not, and et cetera. So you get a lot of arguments over things that for some couples might be kind of small, and but for these couples, because there are struggles in, across many areas, become symbolic and big.
Right, right. The little things become big. And sometimes there's that inability for the parents to determine what is and is not important, right? What
right.
is significant.
Right. I had a woman the other day talking to me about her kids. She has a lot of kids, and she asks, I think six or five, something, but she homeschools them, so she's with them all the time, and she's very much in charge of their, you know, organizing their lives as a result. And so when her partner comes home from his job, and he's the partner who has the ADHD in this case, she says, you know, I need you to do X, Y, Z things. And he also has memory issues, and so he often forgets to do those things. And then she'll say, it's terrible, the kids don't get their teeth brushed, and he doesn't do it, or he waits for me to ask him to do it, and she's very upset by this. And so I was suggesting that, among other things, that they need to create a reminder system for her, for him, so that he has regular things that he's fully in charge of, and that the reminder system is the one who reminds him rather than her.
Yes.
So that that resentment doesn't build up. So, you know, something where he's if he's always in charge of brushing their teeth, for example, that an alarm goes off at the right time and they all troop upstairs, and maybe there's some checklist or something that the kids get the pleasure of checking off to say, you know, yes, I've done it. That becomes part of something, you know, reward system that they earn or whatever. But right now their dynamic is that he waits until she reminds him, then he goes and does it some of the time, and it's pretty problematic.
Right.
It's a big deal.
And so, right. And so they're really part of the problem that you're describing is they're not even in agreement on the systems that they're using, right?
Right.
They're not
right,
they're not
exactly.
just not on the same page in parenting. They're not even in the same ball field. Sometimes.
Well, and part of the issue here is one of because she's so in control all the time, and this is a larger pattern for couples impacted by adult ADHD. She's in charge of stuff there because of the homeschooling and because of the number of children and because he's outside the home and she's in it and all that. And often what happens is that she becomes a manager and he becomes an employee. So rather than being a co-manager or a partner, he is sort of at her beck and call. And partners don't like that. And so they end up doing things subconsciously and sometimes consciously to sort of get in the way. In his case, he'll come home and he won't do anything until she asks him to because, you know, sort of standing up and doing it on his own, A, would take a better system than the one he currently has in place. But he's not motivated to set up that system because he sort of objects to the way it's all happening right now anyway, right? So, so one of the tasks for that couple is for her to learn how to not manage him. And to put the responsibility for what he's doing back to him and let him figure out how he's going to fill that, which typically means adopting ADHD-friendly organizational techniques for himself. But he has to be bought into it, and he has to not be feeling like he's being talked down to.
Right, and she's got to be willing to let go and,
yep.
and allow the transition to happen.
Yes, exactly, exactly.
Right.
And,
yeah, this is
and that's
up
one
of
the issues,
of
actually. yeah. yeah, it's actually one of the issues. This is called maternal gatekeeping. Actually, there's a name for that. And maternal gatekeeping is about, you know, wanting it done just so at a certain, you know, the certain time or the laundry's sorted just the right way or at the right time or whatever, and having very specific ideas about how stuff should be done. And then if somebody does it in a different way, you don't congratulate the person for doing it. You say, well, why didn't you do it the right way?
This way.
That's
yes.
maternal gatekeeping. It's a really bad strategy for having somebody actually want to be interested in helping you out.
Right. Well, and I think I see it a lot when moms, you know, particularly moms who have got a lot of stuff on their plate, it's that effort to feel like they're doing a good job at what they're doing, you know.
Yeah.
And when everybody else does what they're supposed to do, it's a reflection on her in some way of the job she does as mom, particularly if she's sort of a stay-at-home mom or a, you know, primary caretaker mom.
Yes, but there's an inherent bias here, which I try to bring out to people, and that is there's a very strong but not much talked about bias in our culture towards efficiency.
Mm,
and
yes.
So if the way you measure things is how efficient they are, you know,
yeah,
whether or not the kids are in bed by 8:02 or whatever it is, then you get one set of outcomes about whether things are happening well or not. But if your measure is something different, for example, how connected you feel at the end of the day or how happy everybody is, then the 8:02 time frame doesn't actually matter, but how things are done and how you're engaging with each other would be what you would focus in on. And that is critically important to remember as you get into, particularly non-ADHD partners, get into this sort of managerial mode where everything is about efficiency. You know, I got to get stuff checked off my list. Everybody has to get to a place by a certain time. The reality is that's only true within that construct. And what's more important in the overall isn't whether you got to bed at 8:02, but how much you really felt loved by your parents, for example.
Yeah, when we talk about it, we often talk about it, I do, in terms of task versus relationship and not allowing the tasks to dominate the relationship.
Yes, and
it
often does. And this is one of the side effects, actually. This is one of the patterns of ADHD-impacted relationships. So the ADHD symptoms don't cause these things, but they encourage them to develop in the relationship as the symptoms show up and then the non or other partner responds to those symptoms. These responses are very natural. It's really natural for a parent to say, well, if things feel out of control, I'm going to try to wrap my arms around them and control them more, right? That's the natural response. Rather than to say, maybe what I need to learn how to be more flexible with the fact that my household is kind of chaotic and focus in on our love for each other, you know. So get everybody to a good enough point, but not a perfect point.
I was just going to say, we call it GMO, good enough, move on.
Yeah,
and I like
exactly.
to talk about the notion that we want to get parents from the high wire down to a clown car, but we got to remember we're still in the circus, right?
I like that very much.
So let's talk about some responses. Like, how do we deal with this? You and I had talked earlier about the concept of negotiation through emotions. What kind of strategies or information can you offer parents to handle this dynamic or begin
well,
to address?
One of the things you have to be very conscious of is that, you know, we tend to think that our own opinions are right. And when our partner is in strong disagreement with us or sort of gets in our way, it's annoying. You know, you don't end up taking a look at it and saying to yourself, where's the, you know, what is it that is of merit in what my partner is saying? You tend to say to yourself, you know, you don't know as much about ADHD or the issues that the kids have as I do, so you should just listen to me, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So the very first thing you need to do is you need to be able to take your partner's opinion just as seriously as you take your own. And if you don't agree, you have to start to explore why you don't agree enough to be able to figure out how to respond, right? So 70% of things
that... That's so easier said than done,
I know.
I have to say.
But here's a statistic that puts it into perspective about why this is important. This is from a research study, and I can't tell you the name of the people who did it off the top of my head. But anyway, 70% of the things that couples disagree over are not actually resolvable in terms of what we think of as resolvable, i.e. they come to an agreement and they move on. That means only 30% are. So the 70% of stuff has to actually – you have to create a workaround of some sort that helps you move forward.
Like agree to disagree, like 70% of the time we're just going to have to figure out how to live with the fact that we don't agree with each other?
Yeah, in one way or another. Now, sometimes that how you, the solution that you come up with is a negotiated solution that both people say, you know, okay, I can live with that. That's fine. And sometimes it's a very strong, you know what, we're just going to have to agree to disagree on this one and let it go. And you're in completely polar opposite camps. But it's important to understand that, because in our search for, you know, if I just talk to my partner enough, eventually he or she's going to agree with me, that's a bad strategy, because that's not backed up by the numbers. Right?
Well, it's convincing, and when you try to convince someone, it's rarely effective, right?
Right. Much better to try to understand their point of view. This is why, you know, you say, yeah, it's easier said than done. But it's much better to try to understand their point of view and listen to it and respect it, and then say, okay, so since that's their point of view and it's equally legitimate to mine, what do I do about that? You know, do we need to talk about it further so that my partner can really understand where I'm coming from? If I have more education about ADHD issues than my partner does, do I need to give him or her some books or highlight some certain passages or set up an appointment with the resources people at school or do something else to try to get more buy-in? You know, how do I deal with the specifics of what my partner is saying? Don't just assume that your way is going to triumph.
Great.
Right, so that's one strategy. Another is to think about, I mean, people have certain kinds of emotional needs that you can try to satisfy. So there are some folks out of Harvard, the Harvard Law School actually, that has a group called the Program for Negotiation, and they have studied how negotiation works. And one of the things they've studied is the emotional parts of negotiation. And part of those include things like knowing that your thoughts are acknowledged, right, that your feelings are acknowledged, or knowing that your partner feels that you are a partner, in fact, that you have equal status, knowing that your partner agrees that you have the freedom to express yourself even if you disagree, those kinds of things. So becoming more familiar with that, which I think of sort of generally as empathy towards the other partner's point of view, you know, that they hold it, and since they hold it, that's okay, right? You figure out what to do with that. That helps with negotiation. We often approach negotiation from a, as you say, convincing standpoint, where you say, well, so you have to believe this because it's the right way. And people really bristle when it's presented that way.
Yeah, completely. I'm struck by what you're saying. It's again, a lot of this conversation is bringing back memories to the early years of my marriage before we even knew that we were dealing with ADHD. And what got me through those early years before we started learning, understanding, and managing it was knowing that my partner intended to be my partner. Like, his intention was good, and to share the burden with me and all of that. And knowing that had a huge impact on my ability to tolerate some of the things that where he ways that he was falling short on, you know, helping out or whatever it was.
Right. Well, it's interesting because one of the things that, these patterns that are incredibly predictable that couples fall into when ADHD is present, one of them is misinterpretations of ADHD symptoms. So you were able to look at your partner and say
take
your intentions are good, right? Yeah, they take it personally. Yeah. Is exactly right. And so if somebody doesn't fulfill a task like, you know, getting the kids to brush their teeth and that other example, or doesn't pay as much attention to you, whatever, you say, well, that must mean my partner doesn't love me. At least you know. In your situation, at least you were able to say, well, there's some disconnect here. At least I understand that my partner's intentions are good, and what we got to figure out is why isn't it still getting done, you know?
Yeah.
And that's a big, better place to be than just, oh, well, you know, my partner's lazy, or my partner doesn't want to do this, or my partner doesn't love me, or doesn't care about the family, or all of these very, very common interpretations of what's going on that are wrong. It's not that your partner doesn't love you. It's that your partner is struggling with ADHD symptoms around executive function, around organizing, around distractibility, you know, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we have just a couple more minutes. What I've heard so far is a few strategies in terms of really taking the time to understand your partner's position, paying attention to some of those emotional parts of negotiation, and really focusing on acknowledgement and not taking things personally. Anything else you would add?
I would add that these are skills. So you're talking about communication skills. And people, you know, that's a sort of a cheap phrase. People throw that around all the time. But there are very specific skill sets that you can learn to be able to interact much more in much healthier ways as adults. One of them that I teach in my seminars and talk about quite a bit is called conflict intimacy. And that's a easy to say, harder to practice thing where essentially you don't speak aggressively to your partner when you're speaking, and you don't listen, and you try to listen non-defensively and openly. Uh-huh. And that is a skill set that needs to be built and practiced. But once you gain it, the relationship is much stronger, and the affection and connectedness that you feel is much stronger. So these, you know, these kinds of disagreements and all that, you can find healthy ways to really work through these things and build the skills as partners. You shouldn't give up on it and just say, oh, well, we're just never going to agree because we're so different. That's not the case. I see it over and over again. The couples really come through this.
Yeah, I do too. And I think what I'm hearing is you may disagree, but the question is if you can both have alignment on the fact that you want to co-parent, you want to work on the relationship, you want to come through it, then there are strategies you can learn and skills that you can learn to communicate more effectively. If you're both aligned on wanting to hold the integrity of the relationship, the marriage, whatever it is.
Right. To both communicate more effectively and be better partners, quite frankly, you know, take more responsibility for your share if you need to, and let go of responsibility if you need to, et cetera. So, these can all be worked on very successfully, and it's always a great pleasure. One of the things I love about my job is I get to watch couples as they make this changes, and you get to see the same thing, I'm sure.
Yeah, I do. It is truly. There's not a week that goes by that I don't call Diane and say, I love what we do. Because the impact on the family's lives is so profound, and I just love it.
Yeah.
Well, Melissa, thank you for the time and the wisdom for sharing with us and our community. I think there's a lot to chew on, and I'm looking forward to sharing it, and I want to thank you. Any last comments, and where can people find out more about you?
They can find out more about me at my website, which is ADHDmarriage.com. And
great.
I have a lot of resources there, including this seminar that I give, which is really a strong, helps a lot of couples. So,
absolutely. So ADHDmarriage.com, you can find out more there about Melissa Orloff. And there are many articles. I think you got about 5 articles on our website on ImpactADHD.com. So I encourage you to check her out there as well. And again, thanks for being here, and we appreciate it very much. Take care.
I love talking to you. Bye.
Bye.